And welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 68, Morristown. So in the last episode, we discussed the Battle of Princeton. In the last few weeks of 1776 and the beginning of 1777, George Washington has scored two major victories over the British and the Hessians in New Jersey. The first, of course, was the Christmas Crossing in Trenton, and the second was the Battle of Princeton that we discussed last week. Now, where is Washington's army at this point? Well, the fact is that the army was exhausted. They had been running and gunning since August of 1776. They've been pushed out of New York, across New Jersey. They make a daring Christmas crossing. They then have to fight a good portion of the British that were stationed in and around the Princeton area. They didn't have the energy anymore. They're exhausted. They needed to go into winter quarters. And so Washington decided that he was going to move to Morristown, New Jersey, and set up his winter camp. The town was nothing more than a church, a tavern, and about 50 homes. But the land itself was excellent for the defense. It was set on a triangular plateau that offered good protection from all angles. It also gave Washington the ability to attack Howe's flank if he made a move north up the Hudson towards Schuyler's position in and around the Albany area, or south towards Philadelphia, where he was going to try and capture the rebel Congress. The problem was not going to be Howe, though. His biggest concern, and we've talked about it a million one times, is enlistments. And that's, I guess, a common theme for all major campaigns of this war, at least in the early war. Enlistments are going to be a huge problem. Enlistments were running out at the end of January, even with the 6 weeks that Washington was able to buy. He writes to Congress saying that if I don't get reinforced soon, there's not going to be much of an army to fight the spring campaign. Back in September 1776, when Congress was still hopeful that they could, you know, turn the early tragedies in and around the New York area, they had ordered the states to recruit regiments that would total from all 13 colonies 88 regiments. In addition, Washington was authorized to recruit on his own 16 more regiments, along with 3,000 cavalry and another 3 artillery regiments. This was going to total 75,000 men. These numbers were a pipe dream for the Continental Army. They're never going to see these numbers. Washington's army, even at its height, will not even reach half of the numbers that they're talking. So when we get to March 1777, Washington had less than 3,000 men. Washington wasn't ready for the spring campaign. Not only was his army small, but also wanting of everything. They did not have enough supplies, adequate clothing, or footwear. It also didn't help that smallpox was running rampant through the camp. Washington made the choice to have those infected be quarantined and inoculation to be given to the army and the citizens. Now, this is a gnarly thing. Basically, what they do is they take the pustule from a smallpox patient and they cut into a person's arm and then they wipe that pus into the cut. The thought is that you're only being slightly infected, which gives the body time to fight the infection. You're not getting a full dose of the infection, so the body actually has time to fight it. And once you fight off smallpox the first time, you actually develop antibodies to fight it, you know, any other time you come in contact with it. It was a bold and risky maneuver, and this is not the first time Washington is going to make this kind of a daring decision, and we'll talk more about it at another time. But yeah, to fight off smallpox, you actually have to infect yourself with live infection of the smallpox virus, which is pretty scary. Another major problem is this bounty system that Congress and the states had offered to fill the levies that they needed. It was almost like they were outbidding each other and outbidding themselves at the same time. You know, they started out with $20 bounty plus 100 acres. But as time went on, the bounty kept rising, and as quotas weren't filling, by December of 1776, they had the bounty was $86. Now, this $86 that they're talking about is paper money. It's as good to wipe your butt as it is to actually pay with anything. It has little, there's no material backing for it. So we're going to talk about this when we get to the end of the war, but the money system becomes a real problem for a lot of people. And there's going to be some real problems that arise because of it. What they needed was hard currency, and what they weren't able to offer hard currency. So this $86 bounty, well, it looks good because it's paper. It wasn't worth the $86 that they're talking, because Congress just didn't have the money to do it. So you could raise the bounty as much as you want. They could make the bounty $1,000. Doesn't mean that it was going to change the fact that the $1,000 in paper that you were given isn't worth more than 2 cents, the paper that is written on. So that's going to be another major problem, is this bounty system. But they did have good news that did come in March, because a ship arrived from France with 12,000 muskets, 1,000 barrels of powder, 11,000 flints, along with clothing and supplies. Another ship would arrive not long after with more guns and ammo. This is great. 12,000 muskets, 1,000 barrels of powder. They got the flints and the clothing and the supplies. What they didn't have was the men to use them. Now finally, in May of 1777, 43 of the 88 regiments that were promised were finally arriving in Morristown. But they were way under strength. These 43 regiments, the total number was somewhere in the vicinity of 8,000-9,000 men. Now, a regiment itself should have 1,000 men. And that's the book value on a regiment. It's supposed to be 1,000 men, officers and all. So you have 43, and they're supposed to be 1,000 men apiece. That's 43,000 men that were supposed to arrive. He has about 9,000. 9,000 men that were – that means that each regiment was no more than 100 to 200 men. So these regiments were way undermanned. But Washington isn't a complainer, and it's better than nothing. These men will be reorganized into 5 divisions under Major Generals Greene, Stephen, Sullivan, and Sterling. On the British side of things, Howe had learned a really tough lesson from Trenton. He realizes that his outposts were fairly strong, but they were vulnerable to these Americans and their daring night attacks. He decided to pull all men from the outposts to the main garrisons at New Brunswick and Amboy. Now, we're going to talk about that in the next episode. We're going to talk about a time that is known as the Forage War. And it's a series of attacks that happened throughout the winter. Right now, I'm just giving a kind of lead-in to our next major campaigns, which is going to be what happens for Brandywine. So this is kind of the lead-in to that. But for now, Brunswick and Amboy, they're on the Raritan River in New Jersey. Brunswick is more inland. Amboy is on the East Coast. It just made sense to have these two posts open because they shared a supply linkage, which was the river. The problem was the garrisons would have to hold 14,000 men in these two towns. And so this is going to be a real problem for Howe, because he has a lot of men in very small towns and in dire need of supplies. So that's going to be a talking point for the Forage War that we're going to talk about next. But the takeaway I want everyone to know for this episode is, think about what I just said. 14,000 men were moved from the outposts to Brunswick and Amboy. 14,000. And they stayed there the entire winter. or most of the winter, I should say. For the better part of the winter, Washington had less than 3,000 men, and most of them were sick and ineffective for duty. The strength of the outposts was enough to steamroll Washington's position. Even with good defensive lines, good artillery, you're going to take some casualties, but 14,000 men can cover 50 yards faster than 3,000 men could load and fire four times, which is what you would need to turn them back. You would need to turn the men. You would need to turn those men back by load and firing four times, because that would mean that if every man of those 3,000 men hit their target, that would mean that 12,000 redcoats would fall in the matter of four volleys. If to the time it would take to cover 50 yards, the Americans could probably get off maybe two volleys. So why did Howe leave Morristown alone? Why didn't he go after him? And that's one of those things that we kind of don't understand about the winter of 1777 and 76, that it just didn't make sense. Okay, he's on the other side of the Delaware. All right, we'll go to winter quarters. He attacks Trenton. He attacks Princeton. Oh, now he's caught up in the middle of New Jersey in Morristown. No river to hide behind. I have 14,000 men at Brunswick. You could have attacked, but he doesn't. So besides talking about what's going on in Morristown, there is some action that happens in and around the New York area during this portion of 1776-1777. And the first happens in Peekskill, which, if you remember back in November of 1776, Washington had withdrew from North Castle. He was heading south. He ordered Heath, with four brigades, about 3,000 men, to guard the Hudson Highlands Department. There was a large quantity of military stores, and since that time, more had accumulated. But by March 1777, Heath was gone. He was back with Washington's army, and he had left Alexander McDougall, an inexperienced officer, but there was only 250 men that he had. So obviously the British are going to say, hey, there's this place up in the Highlands with lots of stores. Why don't we go investigate this? So McDougall is there. The British arrive. They disembark 500 men. He asks for help. He has to send word to Colonel Marinus Willett, who is stationed at Fort Montgomery, a man that we're going to hear about later on in another campaign that's also very important to the survival of the American army in New York. Comes across with about 80 men, and he is trying to get McDougall to charge his men, you know, fight the British. But McDougall just retreats from the town and stays in his position just outside of town. So Willett, with 80 men, charges the British advance guard, sends them running. The British run back to the boats, but the damage has been done. Most of the supplies and the town in Peekskill is pretty much destroyed, burnt by the British. So they're able to come away with that small victory, that Washington has been denied those supplies. And those supplies were not just food and stores. They were entrenching tools, boats, some ammunition, things that they would need to fight a defensive war. So they lost out on those supplies. Luckily, only 2 months later, the Americans would get their revenge, because the British foraging party was sent to Sag Harbor on the east end of Long Island, my home. And they're there to forage for supplies for the army in New York City. Well, there's an armed schooner with about 70 men and some supply boats. Colonel Return Jonathan Miggs, a man that we've talked about earlier, and yes, his first name is Return, had additional had gone over with two battalions, and he took these 170 men across from Guilford, Connecticut, to Long Island in whaleboats. He bypassed the British ships that were patrolling Long Island Sound, got to Sag Harbor, landed his men at 2 o'clock in the morning. He surprised the British troops, killed six of them, captured the rest, burnt all the vessels except for the armed schooner, and most of the supplies were loaded onto the whaleboats, got across to Guilford, and for this very daring feat, Congress voted him an elegant sword. What that means, well, I'm still looking into that. I haven't found a kind of a proper definition, but it means that he is he's almost like a daring raider. He's a daring soldier that went to great lengths for the cause of independence. Like I said, if someone can find a better definition than what I was finding, I've never heard that term used before, and so this was kind of new to me. When I read it, I was like, what does this mean? So I started rummaging around, and it basically means that he's just a righteous soldier. He's, you know, done really well by the Congress. I haven't seen anything that says that he was presented with a sword. So maybe he was presented with this sword, and that's what it means, but who knows? I'm rambling. It's one of those minor details that I just got hung up on. But the most important fact is that the Americans now have scored some major victories in the winter of 1777 and early to mid-spring of 1777 over the British. And now how is Howe going to respond to that? And that's what we're going to talk about in the coming episodes. But first, I actually have a surprise. I'm doing a two-parter today. I'm finishing this episode, and I'm immediately going to save this episode and then go into a second episode where we're actually going to talk about the Forage War in depth detail. So we're just going to backtrack. This was kind of the layout for this is where we are at with 1777. And I've made my decision. I am going to keep with Washington's army. We're going to just keep on going with Washington's army. We are going to talk all the way until Brandywine, and then we're going to stop. We end at the Battle of Brandywine. That is a promise. Then what we're going to do is we are going to rewind the clock, and we are going to head up to the Northern Campaign, and we are going to discuss, because the last time we left off with the army in the North, Benedict Arnold had lost the Battle of Valcour Island. Well, what happened after the winter? What went on after the winter of 1776-1777? Where is that army now? And so we're going to discuss everything that happens in the Northern Campaign at that time. So if you're listening live, you will have two episodes today because I wanted to break these into two parts just in case you got too tired of hearing me ramble on for one episode. You want to save my ramblings for another episode. Also, I had two separate, scripts that I wrote out, and I'm trying to keep to that. So, So there will be a second episode that will also be posted today. So if you're listening in live, we're going to continue this on.